This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Live and Learn. I'm Chua Eun Teck. My guest today is Dr. Sandut Ruit, who pioneered a cataract microsurgery technique which reduced the cost of treating cataract by more than 10 times without sacrificing quality. According to the World Health Organization, cataract is responsible for 51% of all blindness. But lack of access to surgery in many countries means most of the people who have cataracts stay blind. I caught up with Dr. Sandut last week at the Leadership Energy Summit Asia conference to talk about his work on the front lines of eradicating avoidable blindness. When did you realize you wanted to practice medicine?
I really wanted to, practice. I was inspired to practice medicine many years ago when my close sister passed away because of tuberculosis. And tuberculosis is such a treatable disease now, but at those times, and then that gave me an inspiration to see maybe this is a branch that I should take up and see how much difference I can make in people's life. And that was really the inspiration that I got to get into the field of medicine.
You were 17 at the time.
Yes, I was about 17, yeah.
Did you have to overcome great odds to go to medical school?
Yes, we had at that time, this is really in 1960s, and there were no medical schools in Nepal. And I came from a very small community from a very, very remote area in Nepal, really at the northeastern part of the corner of Nepal where there were no schools. And so for me, to get education in primary education in India, and afterwards to come back and finish my college in Kathmandu in Nepal, and after that to get into university was really financially very difficult, and so I had to really fight and fight for a scholarship, and which I happened to get it, and was sent to one of the very good colleges in India to do my medicine.
You're most famous for developing this technique for cataract microsurgery, which slashed the cost of treatment from over 1,000 ringgit to about less than 100 ringgit. Why was it so expensive at the time?
Yeah. First, when I went back in 1984, as a young, about your age, and went back to Nepal with a lot of inspiration and hopes. And but at that time, the cataract being one of the most common cause of blindness, and but unfortunately, this is a disease which, by a very simple intervention, you can 100% cure it. So at that time, the surgery of choice was taking the lens out and leaving the patient extremely long-sighted and with lots of complications, and a number of people seeing after the surgery were very small. Almost 60% lost their sight. And this was the way it was practiced in, by and large, in all of the developing countries. So I really started pondering and what is the best way we can bring the state-of-the-art cataract surgery that existed in some places like New York and bring to this community. And that was how my struggle started. And the cost really came down by simplifying the surgical technique, which really took me about 5 years to do a lot of research and development, and it's smart enough and using, of course, manual techniques, and which is now called very, very sort of popularly called manual small incision cataract surgery. And then the other thing that we did was the cost of some of the consumables, especially on the use of intraocular lenses. These intraocular lenses cost very, like, for example, if you wanted to buy an intraocular lens, at that time it used to cost $200. And we took this wildest dream. Nobody ever thought that we would make these lenses in Nepal at that time. In 1990, we started making them in Nepal. And after 4 years, we could bring the cost of the intraocular lenses down to less than $4 from $200. So the reach of the surgery, of this surgery, came about millions of people came within the reach of this treatment. So that was, these two factors were really responsible for bringing the cost down.
There were initially a lot of skepticism from the medical community. How did you deal with that?
Almost always, the criticism comes from your own colleague. And when I started, when I had developed this technique, and my son was breastfeeding, and my wife and I, you know, three of us drove an old Jeep and extended our trip from the one corner of Nepal to another corner of Nepal, demonstrating this surgery to doctors who were all doing the old type of surgery and carrying a very small, simple microscope. So very often the surgeons used to say that it's too complicated and too expensive, and it's not fit for a country like ours. And, you know, we should fall in the time-tested method rather than go and venture into this. And when we came up with the idea of manufacturing lens in Nepal, there were a lot of oppositions. And in fact, a big delegation of doctors went to see our prime minister. Fortunately, I had operated on the prime minister. So that's how, you know, it's, but you know, this is it. You have to bang your head. And there were, I mean, these are a few instances that I'm trying to, but there were so many struggles, really.
Do you remember the first patient that you used this technique on?
I really had to use it in bits and pieces. And, but one patient that I remember way back in 1987, in one place in northeastern part of Nepal. This was an old, very old person. Say about, you know, I mean, I will probably say about 70 years, who had been blinded with cataract for almost 15 years, and everybody thought this man was deaf and dumb, and was crumbled all the time. So I remembered operating on him. It took me long time, but surgery went well. And the next day, the difference, you know, the beauty of cataract surgery is that you can see the result the next day. And the next day you suddenly find that this person is actually not deaf and dumb. He's depressed. So, the blindness, coincident blindness along with blindness, if the blindness is very severe, it depresses the patients of other faculties. So your sight is so important. If the sight goes for a long time, it at the same time other faculties also gets to, you know, involved.
That's the year I was born. So you've been changing lives since, doing miracles for more than 30 years. This technique has been dubbed the Nepal method. Can you just describe what this procedure is like and how common or how prevalent is it now around the world?
Yeah. Like probably cataract surgery is one of the commonest medical surgical intervention. Not only eye, but medical surgical intervention. Every year around the world, about 25 million surgeries are conducted. And we actually need to do about 100 million, but only 25 are done. And when we started this technique in Nepal, you know, like I said, we had to struggle for about 5 years of extremely, I had to go into the bush and practice this and into, you know, different situations, not only practice, but, you know, get into the system, you know, and then dream with it and eat with it and, you know, whatnot, you know. So once this system came up, and got fine-tuned, and slowly people sort of regretfully started admitting maybe this works, you know. And then what I had to do was I had to convince the international community. And the way to convince them is to, one, is to bring them and show them. And second is to publish in international journals. And that both ways we did, and we were quite successful. And like I said, even though the technique is simple and low cost, but it doesn't compromise on the quality. That's the it keeps the essence of the quality, because I really believe that vision has to be first class, whether you do it on a billionaire or in a beggar, because the eyesight really is so, you know, doesn't really, they can make out.
I'm speaking today to Dr. Sandhu Ruit, founder of the Tukanga Institute of Ophthalmology. We'll talk more after the break. BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome to Live and Learn. I'm Chua Untik. My guest today is Dr. Sandhu Ruit, founder of the Tukanga Institute of Ophthalmology, who have treated more than 120,000 people across the developing world over the last 30 years. You mentioned having to demonstrate or publish in a journal, and correct me if I'm wrong, was it not until as recent as a 2007 study in the American Journal of Ophthalmology, did the international community attitude begin to change?
It did. First, we had to publish long-term results of this, and which we did in 2000. And that sort of quietened a little bit, and I started myself and a friend of mine who's really sort of like my partner, and Dr. Jeff Tevin from United States, and we started conducting instruction courses in the American Academy. And the first year we had four doctors, and the second year we had about 20. Third year we had 100. And fourth year, the organizers had to give us a much bigger room because we had about 500. See, I mean, the beauty of this this technique, and something coming out of Nepal has to be good. People do not accept it if it's not good. You know, I mean, Nepal has nothing, and people think that Nepal is poor, Nepal is, you know, backward. And but I really had to work much more than other people to present to the world that it works beautifully. That's what I did. And this is what it's not only the surgery, it's the applicability of the surgery and the delivery system in a developing country. And much more importantly is how it is made sustainable, you know, by giving and instituting a pricing tier, cost recovery, where people who can afford to pay will pay, and people who cannot afford so much will pay less, and then there will always be a slab for poor people who don't have to pay. But then this cross subsidy is going to sustain the hospital and sustain the operation extremely well. Good business model.
How do you ascertain whether someone can afford the procedure or not?
Yeah, it's a good question, and I think we have expert counselors, but by and large, there are other parameters like getting the phone numbers, social cards, and history. But a beggar looks beggar on the first look. So your first look and the counselor's opinion on that would be the most important thing. But then there are other secondary, like let's say, you know, whether somebody has a phone or somebody has a job, or you know, so those are secondary parameters. Yeah.
You mentioned your partner who's together with you set up the website cureblindness.org.
Yes.
But before that, you also had a mentor in Dr. Fred Hollow, who you met in the 80s. I was wondering if you can tell us what that relationship was like and how it affect your career path.
Yeah. When I went back in 1984 as a young, freshly qualified ophthalmologist with a lot of chill and a lot of inspiration and, you know, hot blood, and wanted to do something for the country and for these patients, the sheer force of trying to bring in cutting-edge cataract surgery to this community, I started seeing lots of confusion, lots of challenges. And it was at this time in 1985 that this rough Australian gentleman came to Nepal to look at the trachoma in Nepal, because he was a bit of an expert in trachoma in Australia, looking at trachoma at the Australian outbacks and the Aboriginal people, you know. And he came, and then we spent about a week, And we found that we had a lot of things in common. And, you know, like he says, and I do also, that we met a soulmate. So it's very important for somebody like me to have a Western partner. You can understand, you know, I'm talking about 30 years back, you know. So I think that way Fred did a lot of advocacy for the work. And the work I was continuing in Nepal, and you know, of course, later on, I came to Australia and stayed with the family, and looked at how the state of the art surgery has been done in a Western hospital. And then together we went to the outbacks in Australia. And when I came back to Nepal, I started doing this surgery. Fred was a bit surprised, you know. So he said, "I want to come to Nepal." And in those days there were no emails; you just have to leave the phone. So he said, I have to come to Nepal." And he was a very, very, very golden-hearted person, but very straightforward and rough, you know, Australian. And he of course later on became very popular. And then he raised enough money, you know, before he died, so that we could build an intraocular lens manufacturing facility in Nepal. And then now, of course, in his name, we have this Fred Hollows Foundation, which is a very large international prevention of blindness program. Yeah.
Cataract remains the leading cause of blindness. And is it possible to eradicate completely avoidable blindness?
It's not easy to eradicate avoidable blindness. I would say that cataract is something that until now we haven't found any magic solution, magic treatment to prevent cataract. And the beauty is that the surgical technique of cataract is getting better and better. And it's getting more, the results are getting much more predictable. And, you know, we can say that you can see very well, you know. So that's one thing about cataract. And, but there are other causes of avoidable blindness which you can prevent. For example, there's a large chunk of blindness, which is because of not wearing glasses, called refractive error, like yours. We can certainly, you know, address these issues and build a very nice refractive error programs. And then there are other problems, and very, very epidemic in developing country now. And blindness because of diabetes. Diabetes is becoming really coming up very because of the lifestyle change, you know. So that's another thing that you can, early detection you can avoid, and glaucoma you can avoid, and childhood blindness you can avoid. But I would say that cataract, until now, we can treat it, and we can probably treat it earlier than somebody goes blind, you know, but we cannot avoid it.
So since you started performing this procedure, you have traveled to many, many places to do this as well, including North Korea. And I was wondering what that experience was like.
Once, like I said, we perfected the system, and it's not only the surgical technique, but it's the whole system of team building and production line approach and giving a fine quality of products, you know, and the consistently good quality in spite of the high volume that you do. So we wanted to take this to other places. And I, in my mind, I always was looking at areas where there were a large number of blind people. You know, you must understand that we are not politicians, we are not human rights activists. And, you know, God has given me a sort of a gift and skill to treat the blinds. And I must use it in the best way possible, and to the people who really need it. And I thought at that time the blindness rate were too very high in two countries. Rather three, you know, North Korea, Indonesia, and Myanmar. So we started, you know, first in North Korea, and then Indonesia, then Myanmar. And working in North Korea, we started working, you know, purely as a medical, you know, mission. And I'm not, you know, a politician, like I say, you know, like but I go there, and I'm very successful in treating the blind people. And over the period of 15 years working there, we have uplifted the quality and the coverage of their cataract surgery, a lot of doctors and nurses have been trained.
Many have called, say you're leading this war on blindness, god of sight, and or a social entrepreneur. How do you see what it is that you're doing?
I'm very fortunate that I have a job. I have a job and a platform which can make difference into people's life in as much as it is making. You know, and like I said, one of the things that we are doing now is trying to reach the community and trying to build in achievable, sustainable community eye hospitals. And we have built few in Nepal, and we're going to Bhutan, and we are starting to build in Bhutan. In fact, this will be a matter of interest to you, because the one in Bhutan is supported, gifted by somebody from Kuala Lumpur, the Wayne Giving Foundation. The Wayne Giving Foundation, Mei Wen and Chu Chi Wen, they give the entire cost of the infrastructure building there. And they are continuing to support some hospitals in Nepal. And hopefully we will continue this process to go to Indonesia, to go to Myanmar. I'm going to Myanmar, and about 800 patients are waiting there. And hopefully we will make a very smart infrastructure there, which will continue to do this at a local level in a more sustainable way.
I wonder whether you're familiar with Dr. Joseph Billy, who pioneered this eye surgery using laser. It's called the light amplification by stimulated emission of radiation. And he says that there shouldn't be any blindness in 10 years' time. What do you make of this statement?
Yeah, it's a very ambitious thing. I think, you know, we don't see any immediate treatment for one of the most common causes of blindness, which is any form of sort of protection you know, there's no magic solution which can prevent cataract. So people will continue to have cataract. But I think we can certainly, what we can certainly do is certainly reduce the avoidable blindness from 80% to substantially low. And this is, again, a question of social, political, and financial issues. And because 90% of the patients, they reside in poorer countries, largely in Africa and Asia, and Africa, sub-Saharan Africa. So this is definitely related to the government's willpower, and much more than, you know, what we can do. We can do something, but we need the support of the other resources too. So I'm saying, you know, it's nice to say that you can get rid of the blindness, but I think we can definitely reduce the avoidable blindness from 80% to much lower.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for having me here.
I've been speaking to Dr. Sanut Ruit, founder of the Dukanga Institute of Ophthalmology. You've been listening to Live and Learn, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.